Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. There are very few times when the government comes to you and asks for your opinion on policies that it's considering that will be in effect for generations. Well, this is one of those times, so pay close attention to this segment of the exchange. The USDA Forest Service is seeking public input on a proposed amendment to the Northwest Forest Plan. That amendment will guide policymaking decisions in managing forests across Northern California, Oregon, and Washington for the foreseeable future. Joining me to discuss the proposed amendment are my two guests. On the phone is Susan Jane Brown. She is co-chair of the Northwest Forest Plan Federal Advisory Committee. She is also principal and chief legal counsel at Silvix Resources, a nonprofit environmental law firm in Oregon. Welcome, Susan Jane.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate the invitation to be here today.
Not a problem. And it's Susan Jane, right?
That is right. Thank you for noting.
Okay. Appreciate that. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Alan Jornet. He's a retired professor of biology and environmental science at Southeast Missouri State University, where he taught ecology and conservation biology. More recently, Dr. Jornet co-founded Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, SOCAN, and currently serves as its facilitator. Welcome, Alan.
Thanks very much indeed for the invitation, and nice talking to you, Susan Jane.
You too, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Oh, please call me Alan.
So, Susan Jane, we're going to start with you. Allow me to set the stage first. The USDA Forest Service is amending the Northwest Forest Plan to address conditions in five key areas: wildfire resilience, climate change adaptation, tribal inclusion, sustainable communities, and conservation of old growth ecosystems and related biodiversity. A draft of an environmental impact statement for the proposed amendment was published on November 15th in the Federal Register, initiating a 120-day public comment period. The comment period will allow the public to share input on how forests in Washington, Oregon, and Northern California will be managed for decades to come. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. The Forest Service has been working with the Federal Advisory Committee, tribes, and other cooperators over the past year and a half or so on the amendment, and it would be a major change to how forests in the Western Cascades are managed, and I think would be an important step forward to achieve forest resiliency across that landscape and also assist the socioeconomic condition of rural communities associated with those public lands.
Can you shed light on what the government is asking people to weigh in on?
Sure. So the public now has 120 days through about the middle of March to provide comments on the draft environmental impact statement, which assesses the environmental effects of the proposed amendment. The draft environmental impact statement also includes not only the proposed action, but also a no action alternative, so no changes to the underlying Northwest Forest Plan, and then two additional action alternatives that look at different ways to accomplish the purpose and need of the amendment, which, as you stated, is generally designed to increase the resilience to climate change and other stressors of our forests west of the Cascades, and to ensure that they continue to provide the ecosystem services, wildlife habitat, recreational opportunities, that sort of thing that these lands provide to many of us in the Pacific Northwest.
So it sounds like that it's not just tell us what you think, but there are options to consider and weigh in on. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. So the public has a number of alternatives to choose from that the Forest Service has crafted. And the Forest Service is also interested in hearing from the public and other stakeholders if there are things that they missed or didn't consider or got wrong. So any feedback is really welcome at this time. And the Forest Service is really looking to that input to better inform the amendment as they move forward with this process. So the public comment opportunity now, and thankfully we do have 120 days, which is a lot of time, which is nice to have over the winter holidays and end of year and that sort of thing. So public's got ample time to digest the material. It can be a little dense, and it's not for the faint of heart, but these lands are important to many of us. And so I think it's a good use of the public's time to spend some time with the environmental impact statement and to provide good comments to the agency.
My guests are Susan Jane Brown, co-chair of the Northwest Forest Plan Federal Advisory Committee, and Dr. Alan Journay. He's co-founder of Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, SOCAN, and currently serves as its facilitator. So, Alan, let's come to you.
Okay.
There was a webinar open to the public to learn more about this proposed amendment that we're talking about, and another webinar is scheduled for December 5th. Now, I understand you had a chance to participate in the previous webinar. What'd you learn?
Well, I did learn, and I learned exactly what Susan Jane was talking about, the goals of the amendment. And not surprisingly, they also talked a little about the Northwest Forest Plan, which, as folks will know, possibly that was instituted in 1994. Now, I wasn't here in 1994. I was peacefully in Missouri teaching ecology, conservation biology, but I was aware of what was going on. And the original 1994 plan was designed, it's probably worth reminding folks, many listeners probably know, but others may not. It was actually developed because there was the infamous timber wars were going on in the West. And there was a great deal of disagreement between the timber industry and the environmental groups about what was happening to our forests. Essentially, there was a sense that the forests, particularly old-growth forests, were being destroyed. And that became a problem for a number of endangered species. The iconic, of course, was the northern spotted owl, which everybody has probably heard about. And that 1994 plan was developed as a way of kind of bringing together the warring factions, if you like, to develop a plan that would provide timber, but it would also protect old growth forests and the endangered species. Unfortunately, what happened over the years is a lot of changes took place. And back in 1994, the Forest Service wasn't thinking about climate change. We weren't as aware by any means then as we are now of the value of old growth forests in storing carbon, capturing carbon from the atmosphere and helping us with a natural solution to the climate problem. And the other thing that wasn't quite as obvious then as is now is the prevalence of wildfires. In fact, as I was reading the, I've been wading through the DEIS, and as Susan Jane said, it's pretty dense. I haven't got all the way through it, but one of the points that was made was initially there was a slight increase in old growth forest, but over the last 5 to 7 years or so, the amount of old-growth forest has actually dwindled, and it will surprise nobody a whit, I think, to learn that one of the causes for that has been the wildfires that we've experienced. And so it's worth noting that climate change is one of the major contributors to our increase in wildfire risk, and so it makes absolutely good sense that the Forest Service would revisit a plan that was developed before some of these problems became evident and seek to address those problems in a new plan. Now, one of the difficulties, as Susan Jane listed, before you invited Susan Jane on, there are many different objectives. And as anybody who has tried to plan anything will understand, if you try and optimize for 5 or 6 different goals, there's a likelihood that you're going to run into some kind of a conflict. And I suspect one of the weaknesses in the proposed option, which is alternative B in the DEIS, draft environmental impact statement, I suspect there's going to be some conflict between maximizing all 5 or 6 of those objectives. And I'm not quite sure what we, the Forest Service, will do when that comes to the fore.
Well, let me jump in here real quick because that's a very good question. I want Susan Jane to address that. And also, what's the primary problem that's in the current management of forests that this planned amendment hopes to resolve?
Yeah, those are really great questions, Mike. Starting with your last one there, and as Alan pointed out, when the Northwest Forest Plan was written in 1994, the state of our knowledge about forest ecology and how these forests worked was really still in its infancy. The plan itself does represent a watershed moment in terms of how we manage ecosystems, but we've also learned quite a bit since 1994. And we've learned and we've seen that climate change is really eating our lunch, frankly, when it comes to our forests. And the asbestos forests that we thought we had on the west side of the Cascades, in fact, are pretty vulnerable to catastrophic wildfires we saw in the 2020 wildfires. And there are some steps that we can take to put those forests on a better trajectory to being more resilient to future climate change-induced stressors like catastrophic fire. Now, there are plenty of forests that don't require that kind of intervention, and this amendment understands that and would respect that and would use local planning processes to identify which forests are in need of restoration and what that restoration would look like. So our knowledge around how these forests work has really changed since 1994, and so the plan should be updated to reflect that. I think another critical aspect of the 1994 plan that the amendment attempts to address is the fact that tribes, and there are more than 80 tribes in the Pacific Northwest, were not involved in the development of the 1994 Northwest Forest Plan, and as a result, we missed out on all of that indigenous knowledge and perspective and advice about how these forests can be managed for future generations and for multiple outcomes. And so the amendment would bring in tribes and indigenous knowledge into forest management and braid Western science with indigenous knowledge to inform how we manage these forests going forward. So I think that those are important things that have changed since 94 that do need to be reflected in the plan. Your question about how do we maximize all of these very important outcomes from our national forests is a tricky matter. The United States Forest Service is bound by a series of laws that designate these lands for multiple uses, and so we should expect multiple uses to come from the management of these lands. And there are trade-offs associated with maximizing different benefits over other benefits. So the amendment does try to strike that balance between things like maximizing mature and old growth protection, but also recognizing that proactive stewardship and science-based management is important to restore some of those forests. So you will probably see in some forests a decline in stored carbon, for example, in the short term. But in the long term, those forests would be more resilient to releasing carbon from insects and disease or wildfire. So it's a tricky balance. And I think that the Forest Service is really looking to the public, to help provide some of that perspective about how to balance those multiple uses, which, again, is the point of public comment.
So there's a couple of threads here that I'm hearing from both of you. One, since 1994, when our knowledge was in its infancy, mm-hmm. we've been on a trajectory of learning. And in 1994, when the original plan was created, it didn't include the original people.
Yes, that and as Susan Jane pointed out, that was a dramatic oversight, and I think collectively we have become more sensitive and recognized much better the importance of recognizing the sovereignty of the tribes, and that's an incredibly important component of this this amendment.
And that important component is what we're going to get into on the other side of this break.
Okay.
Just before the break, we were talking about the fact that we're on a learning trajectory since 1994 in the original forest plan. We've learned a lot. Climate change has taught us a lot. But we also learned that the original people were not included in the original plan, and they know a lot more than we do. And so now there's this, one of the five areas of this proposed amendment is to include them. But I quibble with that because including someone is not the same as leadership. What about tribal leadership?
Well, I think the expectation has been that the tribes would be integrally involved in the development of the plan, and I think that Susan Jane can comment on this more authoritatively than I. But my sense is that the tribes were very much involved in that federal advisory committee and are still very much involved. And so that committee, as I understand it, is going to meet very soon and offer some comments to the Forest Service on the draft environmental impact statement that came out, as you mentioned, on November the 15th. So I think the tribes do have considerable input leadership into this entire venture. And I think you're exactly right when you say that the tribes have some incredibly valuable knowledge. One of the elements that we get from the tribes is this desire always to think seven generations into the future. Now, overall, I think we are incredibly poor at thinking that way. We have a tendency to think of today and tomorrow, maybe. Next week is just a long way away, but trying to think seven generations down the line is something that we absolutely have to do when we are considering our natural ecosystems, which are tremendously threatened by the climate trajectory that we're on.
Or just to give a little context to that, seven generations ago, we were just coming out of a civil war.
Well, that's a good way of of putting it into context. Yes, indeed. And the other thing that the tribes have, and we've been very aware of this over the last few decades, maybe more aware than we were back in 1994, that the tribes, maybe we were aware of it, but we didn't so much figure this into our ecological management of forests. But the tribes have been very much involved in burning for eons, and our forests have been subject to wildfires pretty much since the Mesozoic, because we're in this unusual what's called Mediterranean climate, where it's wet during the winter and dry during the summer. And so our forests have evolved in a system which is prone to drying out during the summer and early fall, and therefore being subjected to fire. The soils and the vegetation dry out, so inevitably fire is likely to happen. Our forests have evolved in that, developed in that environment, and so they're fire prone. This is the way I say it. They're fire prone, and as a consequence of being exposed to fire back to the Mesozoic 65 million years ago, as a result of being exposed to fire, the forests are adapted to fire, and even beyond that, they're dependent on the fire, because there are some species in our forests, the cones of which only open after they've really seriously dried out, and even more so after a fire. So our forests are fire dependent, and indigenous brothers and sisters manage the forests consistent with that understanding. And so they were burning our forests even as the European settlers, shall we say, were trying to put the fires out, if you like. And so there's a great deal of indigenous knowledge there that we absolutely must take advantage of.
And that's a good segue right over to Susan Jane, because you're on the committee with the tribal leaders.
Yes, our federal advisory committee is a diverse group of relevant interests from across the Pacific Northwest. On our committee, we have six or seven members who are either indigenous or work for tribes or both. And so we do have some representation from the 80-plus tribes in the Pacific Northwest on the committee, certainly, obviously not all of them, but some representation, which has been extremely valuable to those of us who are non-Native on the committee to learn from them. And the Forest Service has also been consulting on a government-to-government basis with those 80-plus tribes in the region. And that process could always be more robust and more authentic and take more time. But the Forest Service has been working through that sovereign-to-sovereign consultation process. And the committee's recommendations do reflect the, and the proposed action, I should add, does reflect the recentering of Indigenous perspectives in federal land management. And there are plan components, which are sort of the rules of the road for a forest plan, that do provide for co-stewardship between willing tribes and the Forest Service to develop restoration plans or policies around gathering of first foods, for example, or how to do more cultural burning on lands that tribes and the Forest Service have identified. So there are a number of aspects in the proposed action that would give tribes more of a decision-making role when it comes to the management of these lands, which is something that they are certainly owed, given the many treaties between these tribes and the federal government and the federal trust responsibility that the federal government owes to these tribes. So the committee is particularly proud of the work that we've done on our tribal inclusion pieces of the Northwest Forest Plan, because we were really writing on a blank slate and frankly had a lot of atonement to do for the fact that these tribes and their perspectives were not included in 1994 when the plan was first drafted.
My guests are Susan Jane Brown, co-chair of the Northwest Forest Plan Federal Advisory Committee, and Dr. Alan Journay. He's co-founder of Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, SOCAN, and currently serves as its co-facilitator. So as a reminder for our listeners, the areas of focus of the proposed Northwest Forest Plan amendment are wildfire resilience, climate change adaptation, tribal inclusion, sustainable communities, and conservation of old growth ecosystems and related biodiversity. So, Alan, you've read the plan.
I'm working my way through it. I'm about halfway through. And as I mentioned before, and Susan Jane said, it is dense. But fortunately, there is an executive summary, which is a good start read. And the other point that that's worth making, which you made earlier on, is that the Forest Service has two webinars. One has already been held, which I attended, and the next one is coming up on December the 5th. And I'm hoping you're going to put a link to that on the Jefferson Exchange.
The link will be on our website.
So folks can go to that webinar, and they will find it incredibly useful. The webinar, I think, was about an hour and a half, but maybe it was 45 minutes to an hour presentation, and then there was half an hour Q&A. And that gave a lot of opportunity for folks to ask questions, and there were some very...
Did you get a chance to ask any questions?
I did. What you often find is when you ask a question and you get the response immediately brings up more questions. I will say I was a little concerned at the what I would perceive to be somewhat naive judgment that the folks leading the webinar offered when I asked them somebody asked them if they perceived there to be any risks associated with the plan with the change in administration. And this seemed to be
a
lack of understanding of what's likely to happen with an administration change where the administration doesn't accept science. I think that's going to be a real challenge.
Are they not concerned with the chance that the leadership could be changed?
The leadership in the Forest Service?
Yes, in the culture, in the philosophy.
I didn't sense that in the response that came to that question. So I think the same is true, that there seemed to be a very I'm going to say, again, a slightly naive feeling that the National Environmental Policy Act is going to remain in place, because there's a lot of this draft environmental impact statement which relies on NEPA. And if NEPA doesn't hold, then I think there are going to be problems. So there were answers to the questions, but I wasn't totally thrilled with them. The other thing that I'm concerned about is I'm part of a group in this area called the Southern Oregon Climate Smart Working Group, and we are concerned about the fact that a lot of folks talk about restoration and don't think of it in terms of climate change, because if we follow the climate trajectory we're on, there are a lot of species, important forest species in Oregon, that are going to be seriously compromised, and some of them are likely to be extirpated from the state. One of them is the lodgepole pine, which is an important commercial species.
Susan Jane, Alan brings up a lot of good points here. How serious do you think the Forest Service will consider the public input during this comment time period? How concerned are you about potential leadership change?
Yeah, those are good questions. So the Forest Service is definitely looking forward to public comment over the next 120 days on the amendment, and will take that seriously. I know that it doesn't always feel that way when you may send a letter and perhaps not get the rousing response that you were hoping for. But the agency does take those comments very seriously and will be closely reviewing them. And I think I share many of Alan's concerns about what the incoming administration may do across our federal government, not just with respect to the Northwest Forest Plan Amendment, but broader issues around the Forest Service and public lands management more broadly. So I definitely have many of those concerns. I think, though, and we have been through this before in a lot of ways with the last Trump administration, so there are some things that we can learn from that and take away to this time. And I think that those concerns are real. But it's going to take some time before whatever changes befall the Forest Service or this amendment process reveal themselves. And in the meantime, we still have a number of very pressing issues facing our forests and rural communities in the Pacific Northwest. We still have the threat of climate change and of wildfire and decaying or declining rural communities. We still need to protect our mature and our old growth forests, and we still need to center indigenous perspectives in land management. And so while I certainly share the concern about the risk of moving forward in what may in fact be a hostile administration, those things are still things that I certainly care about, and I think the vast majority of people in the Pacific Northwest care about. And so rather than giving into our fears, I think walking into the future with our eyes wide open and our eyes on the prize, which is an amended Northwest Forest Plan that does follow the best available science. And I recognize that we're working towards an administration that probably doesn't value science, which is why it is very important for the public and others.
We're going to have to leave it there, Susan Jane Brown. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. Thank you so much.
No problem, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alan, indeed, for covering the topic, Mike.
The public comment period for the proposed amendment is currently open for 6 months. A webinar is available on December 5th. We'll have links to this on our website at jeffexchange.org.